Welcome, everybody. This is the May 3rd Wikibon Peer Insight Research Meeting. We are broadcasting live at justin.tv/wikibon. So you can watch along live. As I said before, you should turn down either your phone volume or your computer, your laptop volume. You can't watch both. There's a little bit of a delay, but we are broadcasting, and we'll be having a tape replay of this event. So the topic for today is VMware and Oracle, peas in a pod or oil and water. And we've been doing a lot of research here at Wikibon. David Floyer has been heading discussions with a number of practitioners and some of the survey work that we've done. And this was really initiated because we had a number of users in the Wikibon community that were complaining about Oracle's business practices in terms of their Oracle's willingness to support VMware, and we wanted to better understand how well Oracle was supporting it, where Oracle was supporting it, what some of the best practices were. And so we decided to initiate a research project, and we've got the results there today that we'd like to talk to you about. David Floyer, you're on, right?
Yes, I am, Dave. Hey, everybody.
Great. And we're also joined by a colleague of ours, Nathan Biggs, who is the CEO of House of Brick. Nathan is an expert in this field. House of Brick is probably the premier VMware Oracle shop and highly expert at best practices in virtualizing Oracle. Nathan, welcome.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be on the call here.
Great. Okay, so let's kick it off here. Basically, we want to share with you some of our findings and have a discussion around virtualizing Oracle. The reasons to do so are a variety. They start with cost savings. Everybody, I think is very familiar with the reasons to virtualize, but there's more that we found in our research, particularly around the area of disaster recovery and the cost of doing disaster recovery and increased business flexibility, so we'll talk about that. And there's still some concerns about virtualizing Oracle. And those relate to the classics of performance and other areas of overhead, Oracle's willingness to support. And so we're going to cut through all that today. So let me start, David Floyer, with you. If you would give us a thumbnail of what we found when we went out and talked to the users, and what'd you learn?
So we talked to in depth to a number of users, and the main finding was that the business value of using Oracle under VMware was high, and there were really two key areas. One of which was business continuity at a much lower price point. And the second was obviously equipment consolidation, particularly for smaller database instances. Grouping them together led to significant cost savings in terms of equipment and operations. And obviously, the development area in particular, much greater flexibility and resilience to running this. So that was a major finding. Obviously, what we also found that there were a lot of constraints, particularly in Oracle's business practices, to fully supporting Oracle under VMware. So there were some obviously technical overhead, which is there when you run VMware. But more than that, there were the business practices of Oracle with poor support for Oracle under VMware. And we found that, at least half of the people that we talked to had experience of poor support. And the other key area is the fact that Oracle don't certify. And for some industries, that's extremely important. But what we did find is that in those industries, if you paid enough money and if you were paying enough money to Oracle in licenses and maintenance, then you could get certification. It wasn't publicized, but there were ways of getting it.
So let's cut through that a little bit. I mean, we've talked here on Wikibon that that VMware, the crown jewel of EMC, we've been on record saying that we believe that within the next 5 to 7 years, VMware will be a company with a $100 billion market cap. It's a software company. Anytime a software company gets that big, the likes of Oracle and Microsoft are going to take notice. And it's clearly competition. Oracle is looking at VMware for sure and saying, hey, this is a threat to our business. It's a threat to our what we've called the telco model, extracting rents from the users. And Oracle has sort of dug its heels in and used a variety of strong-arm tactics and warnings. Oracle, of course, went out and bought Virtual Iron to get its own Oracle VM capability. Having said that, as David pointed out, Oracle actually will support VMware. If you pay them through the nose, and we found that in the pharmaceutical industry, a number of cases where Oracle does support VMware, and so a lot of this comes down to competition and gamesmanship and the like. And so at the end of the day, the user's left saying, "Okay, well, what should we do? Should we virtualize Oracle or not?" So let me start with a question. I'll ask Nathan, and then David, maybe you can chime in. Paul Moritz has said, we are building a software mainframe, and our intent is that we will be able to support any application in any workload in any environment. Nathan, is every application today a candidate for virtualization?
Well, what we've seen is that that every application that we run across is a candidate for virtualization. That doesn't mean that every application is ready for virtualization. There are some applications that may be constructed or architected to be virtualization hostile. Now, in the cases where we've talked to customers about replatforming some of their big application workloads, we always encourage them to consider a virtualization strategy for many of the benefits that David outlined. And sometimes that involves some application remediation. So they have to weigh the cost of remediating that application with the benefits of the virtualization. So not all applications are ready right out of the gate. We always encourage a virtualization discussion around that application.
Okay, David, do you have any – so that's good. I mean, basically you're saying that virtually any candidate over time will any application over time will be a candidate for virtualization, but it may not be the case that you should rush out today. David, would you – sort of second that with the research that you found?
Yes, essentially that I would agree with that. I would put some caveats on in terms of the process within the organization for virtualization. You have to get buy-in from the stakeholders, the line of business. There are differences. You have to get buy-in that the support mechanism will meet their business requirements. You have to get the buy-in from the database administrators. So because if you go and virtualize something and something goes wrong, you've set back the whole virtualization process. So in general, everything's up for grabs, but my strong advice would be you start with the easy pieces. You take them one at a time, make sure they work, and have a successful process rather than starting with the difficult things.
So, David, you wrote this piece. It's entitled Damn the Torpedoes, Virtualize Oracle as Fast as Possible. And that piece actually is up on Wikibon. In fact, if you go to wikibon.org, go under Professional Alerts, you'll see the first professional alert is around today's Peer Insight. And you'll see there that article, in that main article, there's a link to David's piece. And so, David, I wonder if you could talk about what you mean. You obviously didn't mean virtualize every Oracle application as fast as you can. Why should people virtualize Oracle, at least the right applications, as fast as they can? What's the business case?
The key points are that that you obviously can save in terms of equipment, et cetera, from consolidation. And that's a major point for consolidation. And that really matters in the areas of test and development when you are you want to be able to quickly bring up a system, bring it or instance of Oracle and take stare it down again, where you want to do some small amount of testing, and the utilization of those that equipment is very, very low. That's production stuff. And again, if you've got lots of small databases that are well established, again, that's really almost not a, I mean, that's something you should do as quickly as possible, and I don't think many people would argue too much about that. The areas where it begets where you need to spend more time in thinking about that are when the databases get larger, amount of resource required by the database gets bigger and starts to be equivalent to a whole processor or a big one or multiple processors, and when very, very high levels of availability or performance are required. Those are the ones where you've got to be a little more careful. Again, the reason, one of the major reasons that people wanted to virtualize Oracle was for business continuity, to improve business continuity. By using things like vMotion, they were able to get not the full capabilities of Oracle, you know, with RAC and all of the other mechanisms. They couldn't get to the same level of availability, but they could get to a higher level of availability for a much lower cost. And especially for the smaller applications, that just could improve availability.
All right, just bear with me for a second. I want to turn the exit and entry chimes off just in case people keep joining in. Hold on.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
Great. So, okay. So I wonder, Nathan, if you could talk about some of your experiences in your clients. You guys obviously have a lot of expertise in this area. What are you seeing as far as people virtualizing Oracle? I mean, you know, VMware says it's not just about the cost savings. It's about much more than that. It's about business flexibility. Is that what you're seeing, or is it really about the cost savings?
Well, cost savings, of course, is the bottom line for everybody. And so when we look at what House of Brick calls the tier two, tier three types of workloads that people have been virtualizing for many years now, the driver on that was cost savings, server consolidation, and so forth. When you look in the tier one business critical workloads, the big databases, the transactional workloads, those business drivers are still there, saving money and consolidating servers, but there's much more business value, and David's talked about that already with the business continuity, the flexibility and resilience. And so what we're seeing, and House of Brick may be fairly unique, like you said, Dave, that in pushing these big workloads onto VMware. But in our experience, the size of the database doesn't matter. We could have a mini terabyte database, and that doesn't prevent it from running on VMware. The article that you have out there is accurate, that the problem is really the interface to the storage. It's an I/O problem typically, and so when we can address the I/O with a workload and get performance optimized, then it doesn't matter the size of the database. And the number of transactions we've seen, the I/O throughput available in VMware is very attractive, much greater than the vast majority of the customers that we work with. So House of Brick is definitely a proponent of pushing the big Oracle workloads, the big business critical applications onto VMware for the business value that we're seeing in other areas besides just consolidation and cost savings.
So are those some of those larger workloads that you're talking about, would you consider them sort of homogeneous or more heterogeneous? Does it matter in terms of virtualizing Oracle?
I don't think it matters. We've got big workloads like Oracle's e-business suite or SAP running on VMware. But sometimes you have a hodgepodge workload that people have customized and added their own code and have developed over the years, and we think those are great candidates for virtualization as well. So I think that, and as you pointed out, House of Brick is a proponent of pushing these things, but we see the great value of doing that for the big workloads.
David, would you agree with that? If you're in the financial services, and is that the advice you would give to a CIO? Is just, as you said in your piece, damn the torpedoes, virtualize Oracle as fast as possible. Would that include some of those sort of heterogeneous mixed workload databases?
Well, I think virtualization of large databases is relatively new. There are issues on, particularly for complex databases which have high locking rates, for example. There are issues with security. It's not quite as good as a native system. The tools available in the marketplace for operations, for security, et cetera, aren't as good as the best of the tools in native situations. So it isn't in as mature a environment as the most mature environment that you can get. So from a CIO's point of view, the question is, what's the time scale? When will it become mature? And when is the benefit in terms of improved or reduced cost, maybe increased availability? When is the benefit worth the risk to the business? So if you're talking about a very highly critical environment where you've got RAC, where you've got Oracle RAC, and it's a lot of revenue is turning on that, then that's not an area where I would personally advise the CIO to move. Not at the moment. Maybe in a few years' time, but at the moment, I would say definitely not. It's just not worth the business risk. If you're talking about the smaller workloads, where they're more steady and the applications don't have so much revenue implications, then of course the equation is different. But taking your example of a financial a business with a high value applications which have are stressing the limits of Oracle, then the answer is clearly no. I would not advise that. And CIOs are quite rightly cautious, and so are business, so are database administrators.
So Nathan, so I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. So we sort of have two sides of the coin here. I mean, databases, you know, the high value databases tend to be very stable. They're generating revenue. Nathan, why risk it? Why even bother virtualizing those types of databases, at least this point in time? Can you give us a little color on that?
Sure. Yeah, we're seeing that that in addition to those cost savings that I talked about before, there's some tremendous advantages to having a virtualization strategy as part of your IT infrastructure, even for the biggest workloads. This might sound a little crazy, but if one of our customers has an Oracle workload or any other workload, it doesn't have to be Oracle, that takes all of the resources of one server so that there's no room to put any other workload on there, we still recommend that they virtualize it and put that single workload on there so that they can get these advantages. Some of these advantages that I'm referring to, product release cycle optimization, it dramatically reduces the release of new releases of software, of pushing it out to production. It dramatically improves the testability and the validation of that workload so that our customers feel more confident when it goes into production. The high availability that David was talking about, the optimization of licensing. We recommend that our customers optimize their Oracle licenses by using a virtualization strategy. And security. David talked about how security is weaker in virtualization, but But we have found that there are some security advantages to a virtualized infrastructure because the attack profile is a smaller footprint. The VMware, for example, is only a 70 or 80 megabyte footprint, and so with the new advances that Intel and other chip manufacturers are coming out with that are virtual machine aware, so that you can trace security all the way from a virtual machine down to the chip, we think that there are some significant advantages with security. So we're proponents of Oracle. We like Oracle's technology, and so we just like to put a VMware virtualization component in there. We have customers using Rack on VMware that Oracle now supports explicitly in their VMware support statement. So we think there's some advantages to putting these enterprise class workloads on VMware.
So you mentioned software licensing cost. Won't the ISVs just adjust their licensing strategies to make sure that they don't lose revenue in that scenario?
Well, certainly they're always able to do whatever they want as far as their licensing goes. But Oracle's licensing has been the same. The last time they did a significant change in their licensing structure was in 2007. Right now, Oracle's licensing is quite VMware-friendly because you have to license the full server. But once that server is licensed, you can use VMware to put as many Oracle workloads on that licensed server as will fit. And so in that way, our customers are maximizing the use of their Oracle investment rather than leaving these Oracle licensed servers sitting at 10 to 15% utilization.
Right, so I in the piece that I wrote earlier this year, I pulled out a statement from Oracle's, an overview of Oracle's licensing policies for partitioned environments. And they actually had the quote in their statement in there: soft partitioning is not permitted as a mean to determine or limit the number of software licenses required for any given server. So clearly, well, and that's not a surprise, right? We know Oracle doesn't want to have less revenue. They want to have more revenue. But you're saying the last time they made a significant change in this policy was 2007. Although having said that, Oracle are very aggressive about negotiating. But okay, so that's good.
Well, and
go ahead.
And just a point of clarification there, Dave. That is correct. That VMware cannot be used to soft partition a single server. So if you've got VMware on a server, Oracle will not allow you to use that to only license a subset of the number of cores that are available in that server. So
right.
You have to license the full server. But VMware can be used to in clustering and things like that to optimize the Oracle license. So it's not a vehicle for soft partitioning of a single server, but it can be useful in a clustered environment.
Understood. Okay, good. Now, David, so we've heard reports that Oracle will sometimes drag its feet. We've heard certain sales reps threaten to potentially try to change licensing to charge on a per VM basis or of course we've heard customers complain about Oracle saying if you want support you got to go back to a physical environment. Did you see those things in your research? How prevalent is that? Were they confined to certain industries or certain size of companies? What can you tell us about that?
Well, clearly the larger your organization and the more you're paying Oracle, then the more leverage you have. And the earlier in the sales cycle that you're talking to Oracle, the more leverage you have. So what we found was where people were successful in this sort of negotiation was when it was early in the sales cycle and they were buying an application from Oracle. One of the things we found is that an awful lot of people have enterprise license agreements these days, and the method by which they negotiate that is extremely aggressive, extremely effective from Oracle. And from our research, we found that people with enterprise license agreements did not save any money with virtualization. They might save it for a short time, but by the time next year's negotiation came around, they had changed the rules or changed the pricing to reflect any virtualization.
You mean saving money on licenses?
Yes. So my advice would be, don't expect to save much money on licenses. You may in the short term, tactically you can do that, but in the long term you should not expect that's going to be a business reduction of a cost that you're going to sustain. What was the other question?
So I'm just trying to share with the audience the support experiences that we have.
Oh, the support. Yes.
Let me ask you this:
right.
Will Oracle support VMware?
What we found are the smaller customers found that Oracle wasn't very good and did demand that they put things back onto a physical machine. I think the advice is very pragmatic there. There are mechanisms out there which will allow you to go from virtual to physical, and if that's required, just make it part of the process and put in the ability to do that and test and ensure that the same results are found. So yes, they did find that, and yes, businesses should take that into account. The certification was, again, an issue for some people. Very clearly, if you're in the FDA or if you're in some of the financial sectors, certification is important. And that was an area where if you needed it, for example, for FDA purposes, they actually had to pay Oracle a sum of money to get that certification. It can be got, but it's difficult to get if you're a small organization.
Okay, but isn't that evidence that there's no fundamental technical reason that Oracle can't support VMware, right?
Absolutely none at all. Other vendors like IBM have a clear policy of supporting everything under VMware. Oracle themselves use VMware to help themselves in the support of it. So there's no technical reason whatsoever. It's a business reason. But having said that, the business reason is real, and from a CIO's point of view, he has to make sure that he has the necessary support from Oracle. They are a business partner as well. So rather than rail at them for their bad practices, it's more in my opinion, it's better just to bend and make sure you have the capabilities of testing things in the right environment and ensure you get the full support when you need it.
We love to rail on Oracle for bad business practices, so thank you for that advice, but I think I'll continue if you don't mind. All right, so
from a user's perspective, that's less useful.
Oh, that's good. I'll rail for you guys. Go ahead. Somebody had a comment?
Dave, this is Nathan. If I could jump in here just with our experience with Oracle support. We've been, at House of Brick, we've been doing Oracle virtualizations in production for about 5 years now with both very large companies and quite small organizations. We have, and this is just our experience, but we have never had Oracle ask any of our customers to replatform onto physical. We have heard that that has happened. We have talked to other people who have said that they have had to do that. But in our experience in over 5 years, Oracle is providing pretty good support. For the folks that are listening out there, here's kind of an experiment. You could go out to my Oracle support and just do a search on VMware and see all of the cases that Oracle has taken where VMware was involved, and you'll see the level of support that they're providing. They're quite actively engaged in working out the problems. We have had, in our experience, once or twice where the level one person at Oracle will push back a little bit, but in that case, once we escalate to a duty manager, then we always get support from Oracle. So our experience with Oracle support has been quite good, even when they knew that it was a VMware virtualized virtual machine.
So I wonder if we could talk about that a little bit, because we obviously have a limited sample here. We only talked to a handful of clients, probably, you know, over the last 4 or 5 months, maybe a dozen or so. But we found that what you said is true.
Bill Santilli here, and I was just telling you that.
Oh, Bill.
For about I've been on for about 10 minutes.
Oh, welcome. Oh, great. Let's shift gears here for a second.
I have to differ with some of the opinions respectfully. In looking at the financial services side, when you're talking about billions of dollars at risk and customer data being accurate, and if there's any issues out there, and you do have issues, and Oracle comes back and says, well, we're not going to be able to deal with those issues because you're not certified or you've customized your configuration a la VMware, you really can't run a business like that. So while I respectfully understand the fact that you can do it, and you may be able to get away with it with Oracle. If you spend over $100 million with Oracle on a year basis, and you're one of your largest customers, they're not going to take it real lightly that you're going to migrate, to a platform where you're going to try to reduce the spend.
So Bill, I wonder if we could just set up for the audience your background. I mean, you have been involved in IT and technology, business technology, for over 30 years. You've been a strategy advisor to CIOs within organizations, largely within the financial services industry, correct? But also other areas. Can you just in 20 seconds tell us a little bit about your background? Like, why are you so knowledgeable in this area? Just help us out.
Well, I've actually done, besides the financial services area, I've been, as you said, in the industry for over 30 years. But I've also supported airlines, airline mergers. There's a couple that are going on right now. I've also been in the distribution industry and then also the retail pharmacy industry where, where there's mounds and mounds of data, real-time transactional type data. And as I said, it's the core of their processing of their business, and to take such a risk, you're not going to do it for saving 5% on license fees. It's just too high of a risk. It's like saying, well, I'm going to run in production environment without a test or a backup environment. So I guess if you're a nonprofit organization. Or maybe an organization that's really tightly controlled on funds and you just don't have the money to spend to have multiple licenses, or maybe you can't really have a true development environment, so therefore you cut on the licensing there and virtualize that in your production. I can see it maybe, where it's not mission critical. Certainly, it makes sense in the test and dev environment. I've seen that done successfully. And while you are paying for the licenses there, you can virtualize it there and pay less licenses in a test environment. I could see it as an acceptable strategy. But for production, absolutely not. And I will tell you that the Fortune 500 firms that are, one, they have to deal with due diligence and all these regulatory type of issues. And when they have issues of compliance, someone looks and says, well, we're going to be able to run our environment in a virtualized environment, but it's not really supported by Oracle, but they will help you. That CIO would be fired.
So,
hey, Bill, if I could jump in here, just by clarification, Oracle does support VMware. Oracle has a VMware support statement. 249.212.1 is the Oracle support statement for VMware. And so they say that they support all Oracle technologies running on VMware, including RAC, as of November 8th of last year.
I saw their statements there. I saw that. And yes, they'll support it truly in a Sun Solaris environment, no problem. But they give you non-qualifiers and say, essentially saying if you have to do it a certain way, it follows our specifications. And if you do it that way, by the way, and I did see there's performance hits on that, anywhere up to 18% or more, on I/O and storage and performance. So, you have to ask yourself, there's trade-offs here on performance as it relates to life.
Yeah, I would need to challenge you on the performance. We're just not seeing that kind of performance hit on virtualized infrastructures. The I/O performance hit that we're seeing is 2% or less, not really an issue. So, and another point of clarification, VMware doesn't run on Sun. And so that's not an area where Oracle is pushing VMware virtualization.
So they don't sell ESX?
The VMware only runs on x86 architecture. It doesn't run on Solaris.
Or Spark. Well, I beg to differ, but okay.
I'm talking about VMware, not other hypervisors.
Okay, so this brings us back to the first question I asked. So, Bill, before you came on, I asked the question: is every application a candidate for virtualization? Nathan said ultimately yes. David Floyer, I think you said today no, but over time yes. Bill, I think you're saying definitively no, certainly not today. Is that fair?
I would say, to clarify, you can virtualize your let's get more even more generic. You can virtualize your database environment in a development environment and in a test environment. I certainly wouldn't recommend it for production unless it's really small scale and it's not transaction oriented. And by transaction oriented, I'm talking about something that is it's not really, we'll say, batch queries. Something that's more real time as it relates to retail type transactions. In those types of environments, you will see performance hit. And I'm not here to argue with anybody. I'm just telling you what reality is. So I would say that, buyer beware, Oracle will support virtualized environments, especially with BRAC. But again, they're slow in moving in that direction, and they will eventually be forced to move in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the arguing is fun, but we really want to help our users, and there's a lot of concern in the member base about what's the right thing to do. And I think let's just try to get some points of agreement. I think everybody's in agreement that test and dev, the business benefits are clear around Oracle databases, and people should negotiate hard. David Floyer says, "Damn the torpedoes." Can we all agree on that? That test and certainly dev are acceptable areas.
Absolutely.
And then the question becomes, yes. So Bill, you're an advisor to CIOs. You've been a CIO at various companies. What is it that you need to see from Oracle or other ISVs in order to put VMware in Oracle production environments?
I want them, being Oracle, to come back and say, we fully certify it, and we will certify your environment in a virtualized environment. So I'm not even going to, whether it's, a Microsoft or a VMware environment or Citrix, I'd like to see, Oracle come back and say, we embrace it, we certify it, here's the benchmarks for this platform and this operating environment, similar to what they would do in any other of their existing Unix or Linux database environments. And they do have, benchmarks for those their database and various platforms. So that's what I'd want to see. And then I would say, Oracle, you will support this, great. We'll sign the contract, whatever, and we know that the people that are going to support us from Oracle as well as ISVs will, be able to handle any of the issues we have. If I know that's being done, then I'll sign up. And when I do it, by the way, obviously I went in a pre-prod environment, I would make sure that it's running stable for a while before I actually migrate to production.
Yeah,
that's what I need to see.
Okay, so for example, as David Floyer was pointing out earlier, we found that in the pharmaceutical industry, Oracle does certify VMware for a fee, obviously, but the pharmaceutical industry needs it for FDA approval. Right, David? We found that extensively in pharma, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, and they would support it and I in that environment, and I presume, Michael, that you'd agree that that was a good strategy. They actually needed it they were using software which required VMware for their disaster recovery system, which is standard within the pharmaceutical area.
And I'm hearing, what about this RAC, David? So we heard from Nathan that, and we all know Oracle's supporting, RAC instances with VMware, and Bill mentioned some caveats. What's your angle on that whole RAC? Is that sort of damning VMware with faint support? Is it something that users should pursue?
No, they will support it, RAC. My concern when you get to the areas where you need and are paying for RAC is that you obviously have a high performance or high availability requirement or high security requirement. I differ with Nathan on the issue of security. The potential is there, but the products aren't there yet. And and I'm sure they will be over the next few years, but they're not yet to the same level as on a native system. And similarly with the performance, you're putting an extra stress on the system, especially if it's a multiple CPU, and the benchmarks that I quoted were from VMware's own studies on their website, the 18% overhead. So there is an overhead, in my opinion. People say there's an overhead. So you've got to balance the risk. At the very high level at the moment, I agree with Michael that the risk is not worth taking.
You mean Bill?
Take it piece at a time.
you mean Bill?
Sorry.
You said Michael.
Bill. Sorry, Bill.
Yeah. Okay, so that's...
If I'm spending $100 million over 3 years for the software, and I was one of my clients that did, and I'm going to say, 5%, that's a pretty good chunk of change. I may start looking at it, right? But if I'm going to say 1%, and also, oh, by the way, the trade-off is now I'm virtualized, but now I've got to buy more hardware. And then instead of being 5%, I'm going to gain 1%. I really have to question whether or not the value is there.
Bill, I'm sorry, Nathan, are you seeing that people have to compensate with more hardware, more memory, more storage to offset some of the potential performance issues? Although you had indicated there aren't any, but, you guys are very high-level, experts in this area. Are you finding that people are configuring this properly in the field, or does it take a lot of sort of consulting to get to where you want to be? Can you add some color to that?
Yeah, we certainly have some best practices around how to optimally configure hardware to support a virtualized infrastructure. And it has to do with memory, CPUs. We look at every aspect that needs to be addressed to ensure performance. And so our customers, oftentimes when they're considering a hardware refresh, they'll need to review our best practices to maybe tweak some things in order to optimize the environment for virtualization. You don't necessarily have to have a consultant like House of Brick come in and help you with that. A lot of our customers get good performance right out of the box. But sometimes they'll get hung up on one or two things, and they'll think that it's the fault of the virtualization layer, and they'll back out and give up on the experiment. Where, if we could point out a few best practices, usually they're up and running and getting performance that's quite good. If I could just comment on the 18% overhead, the 18% overhead is CPU. And so it's going to use about 18% of CPU time, and so that leaves another theoretically 80%, realistically a little less than that, that can be used for other workloads. So if a typical workload is only using 10 to 15% of CPU, that leaves a lot of CPU room for VMware to have its 18%.
I completely agree.
I'm sorry, David Floyd, you're in agreement with that,
is,
right, David?
Is much less. We're seeing 1.2% or less is what VMware is publishing as I/O throughput overhead, and so it's just not an issue that we're seeing.
So you're saying even for storage, Nathan, you're not seeing. I thought that was the big evil culprit of virtualization was performance was I/O.
Storage is the issue, and the I/O is an issue, but when it's properly configured. And if it's not properly configured, then people will get very poor performance. But if they adhere to some of these best practices and optimize the workload, they're not going to have a problem with I/O. They're not going to have a problem with transaction throughput.
Well, I mean, the fact is that correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the databases out there today weren't designed for a virtual environment. Most of the storage out there today wasn't designed for a virtual environment. So the industry's rapidly learning how to speak virtualization. There are some exceptions to that, but isn't this a function of maturity, and isn't it just going to take some time? The other thing I would add is, I mean, 20 years ago, didn't AMDAL have virtualization on the mainframe, and weren't they able to virtualize these production systems? Didn't it drive IBM to do the same thing with LPAR?
We're kind of coming in a full circle, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, and Maritz's metaphor of a software mainframe is is actually a good one, a powerful one. It doesn't sound like we're maybe there yet, although there's some disagreement here. But Bill Santilli, do you think we will eventually get there as an industry?
Oh, absolutely. I just think that right now with the current software applications, let's even get back to that. It's even more basic than that. The applications from ISVs need to be written to be able to support a true virtualized environment where you're I like to call it large-scale parallel processing, where you're actually, you know, utilizing multiple chipsets and multiple CPUs to do different instruction sets and different complex calculations in the application. So I guess the point is that, you know, we will get there. It's just I don't think that the software applications have been optimized to the hardware specs. So the hardware is usually 18 months, 24 months ahead of software. That's just the nature of the beast. It's been like that for the past 30, 40 years. And you'll see the software catch up and be able to accommodate the enhancements and take advantage of the hardware capabilities. And so I think that's where we're at.
Okay. So how long do we think it's going to take here, David Floyer? You got an estimate as to is it 6 months, 9 months, 5 years, 10 years? What do you think?
If you're talking about the very largest databases, I think that's 5 years, maybe even longer before those go over. But if you're talking about where 95% of the databases are taken over, I think that's a 3 to 5 year horizon. There are changes required from the ISVs, as Bill said. There are requirements to support it properly. That has to come from Oracle. When that happens, and I think it will happen over the next 3 to 5 years, I think you'll find the vast majority of Oracle databases are run in a virtualized environment.
Okay, so you're saying by the middle of this decade, 90% plus of Oracle databases will be virtualized, right? And
yep.
And presumably, as it stands right now, will most of those be under VMware or not necessarily? What's your take on that?
Oh, I think, if you look at today's environment, VMware is way, way ahead. If you look at the smaller areas and you're looking at Microsoft products, and then I think there's going to be a growth in Hyper-V. If you're looking already, of course, there are LPaaS running very successfully with Oracle and with support from Oracle on Unix systems, for example. So if you take the environment, there'll be horses for courses. VMware will there'll still be Unix around and for the very high end, and there'll be LPaaS and Linux variants of hypervisors for that environment. So
okay.
There'll be different hypervisors, but by far the biggest percentage will be on VMware, in my opinion.
Okay, so mid-decade, 90% plus of Oracle databases will be virtualized, with the predominance, unless things change dramatically, being VMware. Does anybody disagree with that? Or can I have a comment on that?
I tend to agree with the numbers, but I think that the adoption time frame will probably accelerate a little faster than 5 years. We're definitely seeing customers now that are adopting it. We have Fortune 100 customers who are aggressively pursuing an Oracle virtualization strategy. We are certainly, though, in to use Jeffrey Moore's analogy here, we're in the chasm in between the Tier 2 virtualization and the Tier 1 enterprise class workload virtualization. We're in this chasm that people are starting to feel their way through. And so most of the barriers to doing that are emotional, as we pointed out. As David said, there are no technical barriers to virtualizing Oracle. And so we're seeing our customers realize the business values, not just cost, as Bill was pointing out. Cost is really one of the least important factors in a Tier 1 virtualization. And so they're starting to make their way through that chasm. So I think that we'll probably hit that 90%, well, maybe 90% in 5 years or so, but we're starting to see some real momentum.
Okay.
Picking up in the tier one virtualization space.
All right, I want to open it up. Usually we open it up a lot sooner than this, but does anybody on the call have any other comments or questions for the panelists here today or their own perspectives and experiences?
This is Gary McFadden.
Hi, Gary.
My question would be, we've focused on Oracle, specifically Oracle databases, but the same issues that people are bringing up around Oracle and virtualization and Oracle databases in particular, would those same issues apply to other databases, whether they be relational or non-relational? Would it apply to SQL, MySQL, Microsoft SQL Server? Would it apply to non-relational databases, et cetera?
Well, my understanding, and be interested in what you guys say, is that Microsoft is actually quite supportive of VMware with SQL Server. And David Floyer, you mentioned that IBM as well with all of its products and presumably DB2. I know of some customers that have actually are actively migrating away from Oracle to DB2. As Bill mentioned, that's not for the faint of heart and can be a very expensive proposition. But, David, what's your experience there? Nathan and Bill, do you have anything to add?
IBM, I think, is has set the bar in terms of fully supporting VMware as one of the operating systems under which all its software will work, and it's unequivocal about it. So I think that's good. Microsoft isn't quite as good as that yet. It's actually pretty similar to Oracle in its support. So it isn't formally supporting things at the moment. But again, I'm sure that they will be forced over to that. But as you say, there's quite a number of customers, particularly in the SAP area, which are moving over to IBM DB2 for reasons of virtualizations and reasons of cost and reasons of support. So Oracle is watching that, and they will, I'm sure, that will be the biggest reason that they will eventually change.
I'd just like to add a comment, Bill Santilli, that, there was a previous comment indicated that it wasn't about cost. Well, I would say if it's not about cost, then why are you virtualizing? And so at the end of the day, it is about cost, especially at the most senior levels. And, it's all about total cost of ownership of running the business. Yes, you want performance. Yes, you want stability. Yes, you want reliability. Those are obviously, we call it, prerequisites before you even consider technology. So to say it's not about cost is totally wrong. Otherwise, you wouldn't be considering virtualization.
Okay, other questions, comments? We've got a few minutes left here. I got some other.
This is McAllen. I've got a question for Bill and Nathan. Clearly, 0% utilization is a wasted asset. Clearly, 100% utilization on a server doesn't work. Clearly, virtualization lets you run at a higher utilization. But at what point do you stop? Is it 80, 90, 95, 99?
My only comment is, this is Bill. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Bill. Our experience with our customers is that we can easily and comfortably push that number to 75, 80, 85%. That's where we feel comfortable with sustained CPU workload.
Uh-huh. Nathan?
Yeah, that was Nathan.
My comment would be is that, obviously it really depends upon the organization what their standards are, and what they feel comfortable with, and what their risk mitigation strategies are. But I would say if you're in a very conservative industry sector, you're probably going to keep it more closer to 60% or 70%. Typically what you normally would do for, let's say, storage, you kind of use that as the benchmark for your CPU capacity as well.
Okay, great, thanks.
Other questions?
Well, this is Seth Miller. I have a question for Bill. About his concerns about running in VMware. Do you have the same concerns concerning running in Oracle VM?
No, actually, it gets back to my previous comment, which was if it's totally embraced by the vendor as well as the ISVs that work with that OEM,
then they can support it well, and they've been there, done that, then the answer is no. I don't have a problem with that.
I just had a comment that the functionality of Oracle VM wouldn't give the same levels of savings, so there may not be the business case for doing that.
Exactly.
Yeah, Oracle may support Oracle Virtual Machine, but it is not up to snuff when it comes to the technology and the performance and the throughput. We have customers who are committing to OVM because of the support, and then they back out and go to VMware because they need it to be productive.
Sounds like it's like buying sports tickets on eBay. You can get some killer deals, and most of the time it's going to work out right, and you can take some precautions to get those really good 50-yard line seats at the football game. But if you want a guarantee, you can go get the nosebleed seats for from the directly. All right, other questions?
Are you guys going to cover SOA stack?
I'm sorry, did you say the... Service-oriented
architecture stack? Oracle?
Can you be more specific?
Well, we're using the Oracle SOA stack, and we're running into exactly the same problem. We've got an issue right now, and Oracle says you got to put it on a physical machine. And we're a huge user.
Really? So...
General Motors.
Does anybody... Does anybody have any visibility on... you're talking about Oracle... Poor Oracle support on Oracle's own stack.
Well, the Oracle SOA stack running on VMware.
Ah, sorry. Okay, got it. David, do you have any insight to that?
I don't. I'm interested to hear more about that. I'm happy to give you a call and talk about it with you. But I don't have a specific answer to that.
If you want to email david.butler@wikibon.org, we'd be happy to follow up with you on that and see if we can find some resources to help you with your problem there.
This is Nathan. We'd be happy to help as well if you'd like to reach out to House of Brick.
All right. Is Dave Valenti still there?
Yeah, this is Dave.
Oh, I met you a couple of years ago. This is Roger Slykos. We met at the Green IT Conference.
Oh, hi, Roger. How you doing?
There was also a comment earlier. There was a disagreement between your guests about VMware, Solaris versus x86, I guess. And just to clarify, they run Solaris x86 on VMware, and VMware will run on Opteron, Xeon, and Pentium.
Right. Thank you.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Thank you, Roger.
Roger that.
So I'd also encourage people to take a look at the Damn the Torpedoes piece that Floyer wrote. There's a lot of stuff in there on recommendations from both a negotiation standpoint and best practice to avoid some of the risks and pitfalls. And then there's the other piece that we wrote was some of the Oracle negotiation myths. I mean, people out there think they can't get, you know, Oracle to reduce maintenance and license fees, and it's not true. We found a number of cases, but you got to be a big spender, and not everybody's GM. Other questions? We got about a minute left here. All right, good. Well, I guess my takeaways here are there's some real benefits to virtualizing Oracle databases in VMware. Clearly, cost savings is one of them. There seems to be some messaging that we're hearing from VMware in the marketplace that it's beyond cost savings. But as Bill Santelli points out, that's a real driver here for a lot of IT organizations. But flexibility and particularly in a recovery, remote recovery, is part of the equation. There are some cautions around mission critical. The sort of group here agreed that by mid-decade, the vast majority of Oracle databases will be virtualized, that VMware will be the platform of choice unless something significant changes. But clearly today, test and dev, it makes a lot of sense, and we had firm agreement there. We've shared some resources with you on wikibon.org. Just as a reminder, after this meeting, we go into an after call and say, all right, what did we learn? We'll be writing 6 research notes around implications for our members and our users. So please look for those, and feel free to come in, hit edit, make the piece better. We're a wiki. Write a wiki tip, and we thank you guys for listening. You've been a great audience, as always. We really appreciate the support here at Wikibon, and thanks for being a Wikibon member. Bye for now.